With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold Blooded, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern. Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one case, but almost a dozen. Listen to Cold Blooded, the Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Now here's a highlight from Coast to Coast AM on iHeartRadio.
And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, Michael Jauer with us. His website is his name. It's all linked up for you at coasttocoastam.com. One of his books we're talking about is Sensitive Soul. The other is The Spiritual Anatomy of Emotion. Michael, we talked about those who are autistic, those who have synesthesia. What about savants, these incredible people?
Yeah, people know about savants, I think, mainly if they've seen the film Rain Man, the character
with
that
Dustin Hoffman
played. Yep. That's based on a real person. His name was Kim Peek, and he could do amazing things, such as memorize all the names in a phone book, which is a kind of cool and sort of very, very strange thing about savants, is they can do things that are absolutely incredible and maybe have no purpose. What's the value of that? You know, it's an amazing trick. You can do at a party, but
and he had to watch Judge Wapner on Tuesdays.
Yes. And people with synesthesia are, people with
savants.
Savantism have a lot in common with people that have autism. These conditions are related. There's some percentage of people with autism that have savantism, and likewise, we were talking about synesthetes, and many synesthetes are somewhere on the autism spectrum. So these conditions are related. The thing about autism is these capacities that people have are not learned. Kim Peek never learned to memorize in this way. They're also incredible musicians. Savants who, from an early age, they can hear a piece of music. It could be like a Brahms symphony or something, and they'll just know how to play it. And it's not that they've learned to play Brahms, but they can. It's like a human tape recorder. They can play it back. People are amazing sculptors and painters in this way. I heard of one guy who was an amazing golfer in the sense that he could. His sense of measurement was so precise that he could tee off and basically, you know, hit a spot.
Wow.
300 yards with uncanny accuracy. Did that mean, you know, he's a great putter? Well, not necessarily, but he could drive the ball. The thing about savants is, in a sense, they're not really in control of these capacities. They sort of arrive in their lives, they don't necessarily have a great application, and people aren't thoroughly, they don't really understand what's going on. They're handicapped in a real sense because the actual things that most of us do, they're not really able to do. They need people to take care of them, just as Dustin Hoffman's character needed the Tom Cruise character to take care of him because he has this amazing capacity, but it's so limited, and he's really not able to have real relationships with people and do things for himself that the rest of us can. So savantism is really an impediment as much as it is an asset and an amazing trait.
Next up, prodigies.
So prodigies are like savants in the sense that they have amazing abilities that, you know, they at an early age, again, a lot of these conditions, really all of them that we've talked about, show up at an early age and they're quite pronounced. Prodigies are like savants, that they have these incredible abilities, often artistic, musical, and they can take care of themselves. They are able to do things that most of us can do. They can talk about, they can sort of reflect on the abilities. The abilities aren't just there driving them, but they're in charge of the abilities, and they can choose how to apply them. Again, the thing that interests me about prodigies is a particular angle, which is that some of them, probably most, if you look kind of across the spectrum of prodigies, most of them feel things quite intensely. They're driven emotionally to do what they do. They cannot not paint or sculpt or play music. Oftentimes they succeed brilliantly in the sciences. They're driven 100%, and it's sort of an emotional need that pushes them. Also, some of these folks, some prodigies, are so emotionally attuned to other people, they're easily overwhelmed by other people's feelings. They're concerned about even some, as a good example, some prodigies when they were young, they get overwhelmed by watching cartoon violence on a Saturday morning. You know, if an anvil fell on Bugs Bunny or one of those characters, you know, they'd be upset for the critter that got, you know, hit by the anvil. So they're very concerned about other people's feelings, and they also, some of them, report anomalous experiences, paranormal experiences, and they seem to have this capacity to feel that's greatly developed and that drives them. And again, it sort of gets to my hypothesis that it's feelings that are core to us and also relate to what we find to be anomalous. It's all about emotions, and the anomalous situations that people, or occurrences that people report, whether it's ghosts, whether it's poltergeists, whether it's precognitive dreams, something called telesomatic experiences, which is like ESP, but you feel in your body if something violent or unexpected is happening to somebody else who you're close to. It seems to relate to emotional ties and to our capacity to feel. And for prodigies and savants and synesthetes, feelings are highly developed capacity.
And how about this one? Those who remember past lives, why was that put in the mix?
Well, that's a great question, and it's largely because people who remember past lives, they identify and feel so close to the life of that person that they're remembering. And also, I believe it's the folks who study this for a living, especially there's a guy named Jim Tucker at the University of Virginia, who continues research started by his predecessor, Ian Stevenson, over many decades. They collected thousands of case studies of, again, kids at an early age,
right.
Who remember being someone else. It's not necessarily proof of reincarnation, but it's something's going on there. And like prodigies, kids feel at an early age almost driven to determine who this other person was. And there are some amazing accounts of children who remembered someone else so keenly that they just had to seek out that other family of origin or that other circumstance that they felt connected with. The other thing is that Tucker and his associates did a study where I believe 70% of the people whose lives were being remembered died in some violent way. They were confronted by something that, at least according to the memories of the kids, just overwhelmed them, and again, emotionally overwhelming. And so it seems that the reverberations of what people feel, especially if it's a life or death situation, can somehow be preserved. Again, the question is whether this is reincarnation, whether it's, you know, one person's life that's somehow being transmitted and that person lives again, or could it be that the situations that were so violent and so sudden overtook people with such force that somehow there's an imprint, in a way, of those circumstances, and that a young child somewhere else, you know, born years later, can somehow have access to them. That seems to connect with stories about ghosts, apparitions, being kind of emotional impressions, where, you know, you hear of these situations, a haunted house or someplace where there is a repeat of you know, some event that allegedly took place that was typically violent. And of course, violence involves, you know, huge emotions that that overtake people. It seems that these may have a life of their own, and that's something that I'm interested in as well.
And tell me about the relationship with the famous poltergeist investigator, the late William Roll.
Yeah, Bill Roll is probably the foremost, was unfortunately the foremost poltergeist investigator, try saying that three times, of the last 50, 60 years. He unfortunately died, I guess, about 10 years ago. But I reached out to him when I was just getting started learning about this stuff. And I had this inkling that emotion and our feeling nature is key in these cases, especially poltergeists. When you think about stories of poltergeists, what the poltergeists do is very much like feelings. Stuff gets thrown around rooms. There's sometimes really strange occurrences like sprays of water, objects moving around, disappearing, reappearing, all very spontaneous. And that's much like our feelings. You know, our feelings rise and fall. You mentioned deja vu earlier. Something happens, we're left really puzzling about it, but it happens very quickly and then it goes away. That seems to be the way poltergeists operate. So I had this sense that maybe it was connected with feelings and people's ability to sense and sometimes, you know, very, very intense sensations and the emotional connections there. And I reached out to Bill, and he was very gracious and said, well, why don't we talk some more about this? We eventually met up. He invited me on an investigation that he was doing, and we started corresponding, and he helped me with a survey that I did. This is going back about 20 years now, I suppose, a survey of anomalous experiences and connecting it to people's sensitivity. And Bill pointed out that mediums, especially in the 20th century, the early 20th century, they weren't known as mediums as much as they were known as sensitives. And so I learned about mediums being highly sensitive people. And what I was able to chart with the survey, and eventually I think about 150 people responded to the survey and I published the results, is that there's a connection between people's innate sensitivity, especially to feelings, their emotional sensitivity as well as physical sensitivities, and their likelihood to report anomalous experiences. I don't think that's a coincidence.
Now, you have devoted a couple chapters in Sensitive Soul to animals. Tell me about that.
Yes. I never expected that I would be as interested in how animals perceive and their capacity for motion as I've become. But at a certain point, it dawned on me as I was hearing about some of the experiences that people had with their animals that are sort of anomalous. You know, ghost cats and ghost dogs, for example. And I should say stories, accounts, because these aren't stories, they're well documented, but accounts of animals that find their way home over thousands of miles. You hear about a family dog that sort of wandered away from where the family was camping and
found their way back.
Later, yeah. They find their way back. Well, how do they do that? Perhaps there's some sort of emotional connection with that family. We really don't know. There have been several books, I think, in the last couple of years written about this. It's an amazing curiosity. People don't seem to have this ability as much as animals do, and our family pets. So animals have just incredible abilities. The way I put it, George, is that they live life closer to the bone. They rely much more on their sensory impressions and probably their feelings. They can't really tell us this so much, but we can kind of intuit it. They don't intellectualize like we do. They don't ruminate, but they do dream. You know, we can see dogs dreaming at night and so forth. So they clearly have a real feeling capacity, and that's what makes them our pets. That's what draws us to them, and vice versa, is the feelings we have between us of affection and love and caring.
Do you think they have something mystical going on?
I think we all do. I think we all do, and that's part of the reason that I have really been drawn to stories about remarkable animals, because we all have this capacity for a mystical and spiritual experience. There are some really impressive stories of chimps, just to give you one example, where I don't know if it was Jane Goodall exactly, but people like Jane Goodall who studied chimps in the wild found, for example, chimpanzees who at the end of the day, as the sun was setting, they would stare sort of enraptured at the sunset or at a waterfall that seemed to just mesmerize them. So my take on this is that any creature that feels, and especially any creature that can emote and sort of show us a little bit what it's feeling, that's the basis of spirituality. That when there's stuff that literally moves us, we talked about emotion, the movement sense of our feelings, that when we're moved by something, that's the basis for spirituality. And I believe all mammals have it. Maybe other kinds of creatures do as well. As human beings, we're really barking up the wrong tree if we limit spirituality to ourselves. It's just our ability to talk about it that separates us. But I think all creatures that have a feeling for themselves in the world and can relate to other creatures and feel for them, that sort of empathy is key to our spiritual nature.
Listen to more Coast to Coast AM every weeknight at 1 a.m. Eastern, and go to coasttocoastam.com for more.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia, movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold-Blooded, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern. Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one case, but almost a dozen. Listen to Cold-Blooded, the Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.